Earth revolves around the sun, or that there are other planets than this. How little we know of what there is to know. I wish that I were going to live a long time instead of going to die today, because I have learned much about life in these 4 days. More, I think, than in all the other time. I'd like to be an old man, and to really know. I wonder if you keep on learning, or if there's only a certain amount each man can understand. I thought I knew about so many things that I know nothing of. I wish there was more time. You taught me a lot, Guapa, he said in English.
What did you say?
I have learned much from thee.
Que va, she said. It is thou who art educated.
Educated, he thought. I have the very smallest beginnings of an education. The very small beginnings. If I die on this day, it is a waste, because I know a few things now. I wonder if you only learn them now because you are oversensitized because of the shortness of the time. There is no such thing as a shortness of time, though. You should have sense enough to know that, too. I have been all my life in these hills since I have been here. Anselmo is my oldest friend. I know him better than I know Charles, than I know Chubb, than I know Guy, than I know Mike, and I know them well. Augustine, with his vile mouth, is my brother, and I never had a brother. Maria is my true love and my wife. I never had a true love. I never had a wife. She is also my sister, and I never had a sister, and my daughter, and I never will have a daughter. I hate to leave a thing that is so good. He finished tying his rope-soled shoes. I find life very interesting, he said to Maria. She was sitting beside him on the robe, her hands clasped around her ankles. Someone moved the blanket aside from the entrance to the cave, and they both saw the light. It was night still, and here was no promise of morning except that as he looked up through the pines, he saw how low the stars had swung. The morning would be coming fast now in this month.
Roberto, Maria said.
Yes, Guapa.
In this of today, we will be together, will we not?
After the start, yes.
Not at the start?
No. Thou wilt be with the horses.
I cannot be with thee?
No. I have work that only I can do, and I would worry about thee.
But you will come fast when it is done?
Very fast, he said, and grinned in the dark. Come, Guapa, let us go and eat.
And thy robe?
Roll it up, if it pleases thee.
It pleases me, she said.
I will help thee.
Nay, let me do it alone.
She knelt to spread and roll the robe, then changed her mind and stood up and shook it so it flapped. Then she knelt down again to straighten it and roll it. Robert Jordan picked up the two packs, holding them carefully so that nothing would spill from the slits in them, and walked over through the pines to the cave mouth where the smoky blanket hung. It was 3:10 by his watch when he pushed the blanket aside with his elbow and went into the cave. Chapter 38. They were in the cave, and the men were standing before the fire Maria was fanning. Pilar had coffee ready in a pot. She had not gone back to bed at all since she had roused Robert Jordan, and now she was sitting on a stool in the smoky cave, sewing the rip in one of Jordan's packs. The other pack was already sewed. The firelight lit up her face.
"Take more of the stew," she said to Fernando. "What does it matter if thy belly should be full? There is no doctor to operate if you take a goring."
"Don't speak that way, woman," Augustine said. "Thou hast the tongue of a great whore."
He was leaning on the automatic rifle, its legs folded close against the fretted barrel. His pockets were full of grenades, a sack of pans hung from one shoulder, and a full bandolier of ammunition hung over the other shoulder. He was smoking a cigarette, and he held a bowl of coffee in one hand and blew smoke onto its surface as he raised it to his lips.
"Thou art a walking hardware store," Pilar said to him. "Thou canst not walk 100 yards with all that."
"Que va, woman," Augustine said. "It is all downhill."
"There is a climb to the post," Fernando said, "before the downward slope commences."
"I will climb it like a goat," Augustine said.
"And thy brother?" he asked Eladio. "Thy famous brother has mucked off?"
Eladio was standing against the wall.
"Shut up," he said.
He was nervous, and he knew they all knew it. He was always nervous and irritable before action. He moved from the wall to the table and began filling his pockets with grenades from one of the rawhide-covered panniers that leaned open against the table leg. Robert Jordan squatted by the pannier beside him. He reached into the pannier and picked out 4 grenades. Three were the oval mill bomb type, serrated, heavy iron, with a spring level held down in position by a cotter pin with pulling rig attached.
Where did these come from? He asked Eladio.
Those? Those are from the Republic. The old man brought them.
How are they?
Valen más que pesan, Eladio said. They are worth a fortune apiece.
I brought those, Anselmo said. 60 in one pack. 90 pounds, Inglés.
Have you used those? Robert Jordan asked Pilar.
Que va, have we used them? The woman said. It was with those Pablo slew the post at Otero.
When she mentioned Pablo, Augustine started cursing. Robert Jordan saw the look on Pilar's face in the firelight.
Leave it, she said to Augustine sharply. It does no good to talk.
Have they always exploded?
Robert Jordan held the gray-painted grenade in his hand, trying the bend of the cotter pin with his thumbnail.
Always, Eladio said. There was not a dud in any of that lot we used.
And how quickly?
In the distance one can throw it. Quickly. Quickly enough.
And these?
He held up a soup tin-shaped bomb with a tape wrapping around a wire loop.
They are a garbage, Eladio told him. They blow, yes, but it is all flash and no fragments.
But do they always blow?
Que va, always, Pilar said. There is no always, either with our munitions or theirs.
But you said the others always blew.
Not me, Pilar told him. You asked another, not me. I have seen no always in any of that stuff.
They all blew, Eladio insisted. Speak the truth, woman.
How do you know they all blew? Pilar asked him. It was Pablo who threw them. You killed no one at Otero.
That son of a great whore, Augustine began.
Leave it alone, Pilar said sharply.
Then she went on.
They are all much the same, Inglés, but the corrugated ones are more simple.
I'd better use one of each on each set, Robert Jordan thought, but the serrated type will lash easier and more securely.
Are you going to be throwing bombs, Inglés? Augustine asked.
Why not? Robert Jordan said.
But crouched there, sorting out the grenades, what he was thinking was, it is impossible. How I could have deceived myself about it, I do not know. We were as sunk when they attacked Sordo, as Sordo was sunk when the snow stopped. It is that you can't accept it. You have to go on and make a plan that you know is impossible to carry out. You made it, and now you know it is no good. It's no good now, in the morning. You can take either of the posts absolutely okay with what you've got here, but you can't take them both. You can't be sure of it, I mean. Don't deceive yourself. Not when the daylight comes. Trying to take them both will never work. Pablo knew that all the time. I suppose he always intended to muck off, but he knew we were cooked when Sordo was attacked. You can't base an operation on the presumption that miracles are going to happen. You will kill them all off, and not even get your bridge blown if you have nothing better than what you have now. You will kill off Pilar, Anselmo, Augustine, Primitivo, this jumpy Eladio, the worthless gypsy, and old Fernando. And you won't get your bridge blown. Do you suppose there will be a miracle, and Goltz will get the message from Andres and stop it? If there isn't, you are going to kill them all off with those orders. Maria, too. You'll kill her, too, with those orders. Can't you even get her out of it? God damn Pablo to hell, he thought. No, don't get angry. Getting angry is as bad as getting scared. But instead of sleeping with your girl, you should have ridden all night through these hills with the woman, to try to dig up enough people to make it work. Yes, he thought. And if anything happened to me so I was not here to blow it? Yes, that. That's why you weren't out. And you couldn't send anybody out because you couldn't run a chance of losing them and being short one more. You had to keep what you had and make a plan to do it with them. But your plan stinks. It stinks, I tell you. It was a night plan and it's morning now. Night plans aren't any good in the morning. The way you think at night is no good in the morning. So now you know it is no good. What if John Mosby did get away with things as impossible as this? Sure he did. Much more difficult. And remember, do not undervaluate the element of surprise. Remember that. Remember it isn't goofy if you can make it stick. But that is not the way you are supposed to make it. You should make it not only possible, but sure. But look at how it all has gone. Well, it was wrong in the first place, and such things accentuate disaster as a snowball rolls up wet snow. He looked up from where he was squatted by the table and saw Maria, and she smiled at him. He grinned back with the front of his face and selected 4 more grenades and put them in his pockets. I could unscrew the detonators and just use them, he thought. But I don't think the fragmentation will have any bad effect. It will come instantaneously with the explosion of the charge, and it won't disperse it. At least I don't think it will. I'm sure it won't. Have a little confidence, he told himself. And you, last night, thinking about how you and your grandfather were so terrific, and your father was a coward. Show yourself a little confidence now. He grinned at Maria again, but the grin was still no deeper than the skin that felt tight over his cheekbones and his mouth. She thinks you're wonderful, he thought. I think you stink. And the Gloria and all that nonsense that you had. You had wonderful ideas, didn't you? You had this world all taped, didn't you? The hell with all of that. Take it easy, he told himself. Don't get into a rage. That's just a way out, too. There are always ways out. You've got to bite on the nail now. There isn't any need to deny everything there's been just because you are going to lose it. Don't be like some damned snake with a broken back, biting at itself. And your back isn't broken either, you hound. Wait until you're hurt before you start to cry. Wait until the fight before you get angry. There's lots of time for it in a fight. It will be some use to you in a fight. Pilar came over to him with the bag. It is strong now, she said. Those grenades are very good, Inglés. You can have confidence in them. How do you feel, woman? She looked at him and shook her head and smiled. He wondered how far into her face the smile went. It looked deep enough. Good, she said. Dentro de la gravedad. Then she said, squatting by him, How does it seem to thee, now that it is really starting? That we are few, Robert Jordan said to her quickly. To me too, she said. Very few. Then she said, still to him alone, The Maria can hold the horses by herself. I am not needed for that. We will hobble them. They are cavalry horses, and the firing will not panic them. I will go to the lower post and do that which was the duty of Pablo. In this way we are one more. Good, he said. I thought you might wish to. Nay, Inglés, Pilar said, looking at him closely. Do not be worried. All will be well. Remember they expect no such thing to come to them. Yes, Robert Jordan said. One other thing, Inglés, Pilar said as softly as her harsh whisper could be soft. In that thing of the hand. What thing of the hand? He said angrily. Nay, listen. Do not be angry, little boy. In regard to that thing of the hand, that is all gypsy nonsense that I make to give myself an importance. There is no such thing. Leave it alone, he said coldly. Nay, she said harshly and lovingly. It is just a lying nonsense that I make. I would not have thee worry in the day of battle. I am not worried, Robert Jordan said. Yes, Inglés, she said. Thou art very worried, for good cause. But all will be well, Inglés. It is for this that we are born. I don't need a political commissar, Robert Jordan told her. She smiled at him again, smiling fairly and truly with the harsh lips and the wide mouth, and said, I care for thee very much, Inglés. I don't want that now, he said. Ni tú, ni Dios. Yes, Pilar said in that husky whisper, I know. I only wish to tell thee. And do not worry. We will do all very well. Why not? Robert Jordan said. And the very thinnest edge of the skin in front of his face smiled. Of course we will. All will be well. When do we go? Pilar asked. Robert Jordan looked at his watch. Any time, he said. He handed one of the packs to Anselmo. How are you doing, old one? He asked. The old man was finishing whittling the last of a pile of wedges he had copied from a model Robert Jordan had given him. These were extra wedges in case they should be needed. Well, the old man said, and nodded. So far, very well. He held his hand out. Look, he said, and smiled. His hands were perfectly steady. Bueno, ¿y qué? Robert Jordan said to him. I can always keep the whole hand steady. Point with one finger. Anselmo pointed. The finger was trembling. He looked at Robert Jordan and shook his head. Mine too, Robert Jordan showed him. Always. That is normal. Not for me, Fernando said. He put his right forefinger out to show them, then the left forefinger. Canst thou spit? Augustine asked him and winked at Robert Jordan. Fernando hawked and spat proudly onto the floor of the cave,
then rubbed it in the dirt with his foot.
"You filthy mule," Pilar said to him. "Spit in the fire if thou must vaunt thy courage."
"I would not have spat on the floor, Pilar, if we were not leaving this place," Fernando said primly.
"Be careful where you spit today," Pilar told him. "It may be some place you will not be leaving." "That one speaks like a black cat," Augustine said.
He had the nervous necessity to joke that is another form of what they all felt.
"I joke," said Pilar. "Me too," said Augustine. "But me cago en la leche, but I will be content when it starts."
"Where is the gypsy?" Robert Jordan asked Eladio.
"With the horses," Eladio said. "You can see him from the cave mouth."
"How is he?" Eladio grinned.
"With much fear," he said.
It reassured him to speak of the fear of another.
"Listen, Inglés," Pilar began.
Robert Jordan looked toward her, and as he did, he saw her mouth open, and the unbelieving look come on her face, and he swung toward the cave mouth, reaching for his pistol. There, holding the blanket aside with one hand, the short, automatic rifle muzzle with its flash cone jutting above his shoulder, was Pablo, standing short, wide, bristly-faced, his small, red-rimmed eyes looking toward no one in particular.
"Thou,"
Pilar said to him, unbelieving.
"Thou."
"Me?" said Pablo, evenly.
He came into the cave.
"Hola, Inglés," he said. "I have 5 from the bands of Elias and Alejandro above with their horses."
"And the exploder and the detonators?" Robert Jordan said. "And the other material?"
"I threw them down the gorge into the river," Pablo said, still looking at no one. "But I've thought of a way to detonate using a grenade."
"So have I," Robert Jordan said.
"Have you a drink of anything?" Pablo asked wearily.
Robert Jordan handed him the flask, and he swallowed fast, then wiped his mouth on the back of his hand.
"What passes with you?" Pilar asked.
"Nada," Pablo said, wiping his mouth again. "Nothing. I have come back."
"But what?"
"Nothing. I had a moment of weakness. I went away, but I am come back."
He turned to Robert Jordan.
"En el fondo no soy cobarde," he said. "At bottom I am not a coward."
"But you are very many other things," Robert Jordan thought. "Damned if you're not. But I'm glad to see you, you son of a bitch."
5 was all I could get from Elias and Alejandro," Pablo said. "I have ridden since I left here. 9 of you could never have done it, never. I knew that last night when the Inglés explained it. Never. There are 7 men and a corporal at the lower post. Suppose there is an alarm or that they fight."
He looked at Robert Jordan now.
"When I left, I thought you would know that it was impossible and would give it up. Then after I'd thrown away thy material, I saw it in another manner."
"I am glad to see thee," Robert Jordan said. He walked over to him. "We are all right with the grenades. That will work. The other does not matter now."
"Nay," Pablo said, "I do nothing for thee. Thou art a thing of bad omen. All of this comes from thee. Sordo also. But after I'd thrown away thy material, I found myself too lonely."
"Thy mother," Pilar said.
"So I rode for the others to make it possible for it to be successful. I have brought the best that I could get. I have left them at the top so I could speak to you first. They think I am the leader."
"Thou art," Pilar said, "if thee wishes."
Pablo looked at her and said nothing. Then he said simply and quietly,
"I have thought much since the thing of Sordo. I believe if we must finish, we must finish together. But thou, Inglés, I hate thee for bringing this to us."
"But Pablo," Fernando, his pockets full of grenades, a bandolier of cartridges over his shoulder, he still wiping in his pan of stew with a piece of bread, began,
"Do you not believe the operation can be successful? Night before last you said you were convinced it would be."
"Give him some more stew," Pilar said viciously to Maria. Then to Pablo, her eyes softening.
"So you have come back, eh?"
"Yes, woman," Pablo said.
"Well, thou art welcome," Pilar said to him. "I did not think thou couldst be the ruin thou appeared to be."
"Having done such a thing, there is a loneliness that cannot be borne," Pablo said to her quietly.
"That cannot be borne," she mocked him. "That cannot be borne by thee for 15 minutes.
"Do not mock me, woman. I have come back."
"And thou art welcome," she said.
Didst not hear me the first time? Drink thy coffee and let us go. So much theater tires me.
Is that coffee? Pablo asked.
Certainly, Fernando said.
Give me some, Maria, Pablo said. How art thou? He did not look at her.
Well, Maria told him, and brought him a bowl of coffee. Do you want stew?
Pablo shook his head. No me gusta estar solo, Pablo went on, explaining to Pilar as though the others were not there. I do not like to be alone, sabes? Yesterday, all day alone, working for the good of all, I was not lonely. But last night, hombre, que malo pasé.
Thy predecessor, the famous Judas Iscariot, hanged himself, Pilar said.
Don't talk to me that way, woman, Pablo said. Have you not seen? I am back. Don't talk of Judas nor nothing of that. I am back.
How are these people thee brought? Pilar asked him. Hast brought anything worth bringing?
Son buenos, Pablo said. He took a chance and looked at Pilar squarely, then looked away. Buenos y bobos, good ones and stupids, ready to die and all. A tu gusto, according to thy taste, the way you like them.
Pablo looked Pilar in the eyes again, and this time he did not look away. He kept on looking at her squarely with his small, red-rimmed pig eyes. Thou, she said, and her husky voice was fond again. Thou. I suppose if a man has something once, always something of it remains.
Listo, Pablo said, looking at her squarely and flatly now. I am ready for what the day brings.
I believe thou art back, Pilar said to him. I believe it. But, hombre, thou wert a long way gone.
Lend me another swallow from thy bottle, Pablo said to Robert Jordan. And then let us be going.
Chapter 39. In the dark, they came up the hill through the timber to the narrow pass at the top. They were all loaded heavily, and they climbed slowly. The horses had loads, too, packed over the saddles.
We can cut them loose if it is necessary, Pilar had said. But with that, if we can keep it, we can make another camp.
And the rest of the ammunition? Robert Jordan had asked as they lashed the packs.
In those saddlebags.
Robert Jordan felt the weight of his heavy pack, the dragging on his neck from the pull of his jacket with its pockets full of grenades, the weight of his pistol against his thigh, and the bulging of his trouser pockets where the clips for the submachine gun were. In his mouth was the taste of the coffee, in his right hand he carried the submachine gun, and with his left hand he reached and pulled up the collar of his jacket to ease the pull of the pack straps.
Inglés, Pablo said to him, walking close beside him in the dark.
What, man?
These I have brought. Think this is to be successful because I have brought them, Pablo said. Do not say anything to disillusion them.
Good, Robert Jordan said. But let us make it successful.
They have 5 horses, sabes?
Pablo said cautiously.
Good, said Robert Jordan. We will keep all the horses together.
Good, said Pablo, and nothing more.
I didn't think you had experienced any complete conversion on the road to Tarsus, old Pablo, Robert Jordan thought. No. Your coming back was miracle enough. I don't think there will ever be any problem about canonizing you.
With those 5, I will deal with the lower post, as well as Sordo would have, Pablo said. I will cut the wire and fall back upon the bridge as we convened.
We went over this all 10 minutes ago, Robert Jordan thought. I wonder why this now.
There is a possibility of making it to Gredos, Pablo said. Truly, I've thought much of it.
I believe you've had another flash in the last few minutes, Robert Jordan said to himself. You have had another revelation. But you're not going to convince me that I am invited. No, Pablo, do not ask me to believe too much. Ever since Pablo had come into the cave and said he had 5 men, Robert Jordan felt increasingly better. Seeing Pablo again had broken the pattern of tragedy into which the whole operation had seemed grooved ever since the snow. And since Pablo had been back, he felt not that his luck had turned, since he did not believe in luck, but that the whole thing had turned for the better, and that now it was possible. Instead of the surety of failure, he felt confidence rising in him, as a tire begins to fill with air from a slow pump. There was little difference at first, although there was a definite beginning,
as when the pump starts and the rubber of the tube crawls a little, but it came now as steadily as a tide rising, or the sap rising in a tree, until he began to feel the first edge of that negation of apprehension that often turned into actual happiness before action. This was the greatest gift that he had, the talent that fitted him for war, the ability not to ignore, but to despise whatever bad ending there could be. This quality was destroyed by too much responsibility for others, or the necessity of undertaking something ill-planned or badly conceived. For in such things the bad ending, failure, could not be ignored. It was not simply a possibility of harm to oneself, which could be ignored. He knew he himself was nothing, and he knew death was nothing. He knew that truly as he knew anything. In the last few days, he had learned that he himself, with another person, could be everything. But inside himself he knew that this was the exception. That we have had, he thought. In that I have been most fortunate. That was given to me perhaps because I never asked for it. That cannot be taken away, nor lost. But that is over and done with now on this morning, and what there is to do now is our work. And you, he said to himself, I am glad to see you getting a little something back that was badly missing for a time. But you were pretty bad back there. I was ashamed enough of you there for a while. Only I was you. There wasn't any me to judge you. We were all in bad shape, you and me and both of us. Come on now. Quit thinking like a schizophrenic. One at a time now. You're all right again now. But listen, you must not think of the girl all day, ever. You can do nothing now to protect her, except to keep her out of it, and that you are doing. There are evidently going to be plenty of horses, if you can believe the signs. The best thing you can do for her is to do the job well, and fast, and get out. And thinking of her will only handicap you in this. So do not think of her ever. Having thought this out, he waited until Maria came up, walking with Pilar and Rafael and the horses. Hi, guapa, he said to her in the dark. How are you?
I am well, Roberto, she said.
Don't worry about anything, he said to her, and shifting the gun to his left hand, he put a hand on her shoulder.
I do not, she said.
It is all very well organized, he told her. Rafael will be with thee, with the horses.
I would rather be with thee.
Nay, the horses is where thou art most useful.
Good, she said. There I will be.
Just then one of the horses whinnied, and from the open place below the opening through the rocks, a horse answered, the neigh rising into a shrill, sharply broken quaver. Robert Jordan saw the bulk of the new horses ahead in the dark. He pressed forward and came up to them with Pablo. The men were standing by their mounts. Salud, Robert Jordan said.
Salud,
they answered in the dark. He could not see their faces.
This is the Inglés who comes with us, Pablo said. The dynamiter.
No one said anything to that. Perhaps they nodded in the dark.
Let us get going, Pablo, one man said. Soon we will have the daylight on us. Did you bring any more grenades? Another asked.
Plenty, said Pablo. Supply yourselves when we leave the animals.
Then let us go, another said. We've been waiting here half the night. Hola, Pilar, another said as the woman came up. Que me maten, if it is not Pepe, Pilar said huskily. How are you, shepherd?
Good, said the man. Dentro de la gravedad.
What are you riding? Pilar asked him.
The grey of Pablo, the man said. It is much horse.
Come on, another man said. Let us go. There is no good in gossiping here.
How art thou, Alicio? Pilar said to him as he mounted.
How would I be? He said rudely. Come on, woman, we have work to do.
Pablo mounted the big bay horse.
Keep thy mouth shut and follow me, he said. I will lead you to the place where we will leave the horses.
Chapter 40. During the time that Robert Jordan had slept through, the time he had spent planning the destruction of the bridge, and the time that he had been with Maria, Andres had made slow progress. Until he had reached the Republican lines, he had traveled across country and through the fascist lines as fast as a countryman in good physical condition who knew the country well could travel in the dark. But once inside the Republican lines, it went very slowly. In theory, he should only have had to show the safe conduct given him by Robert Jordan stamped with the seal of the SIM and the dispatch which bore the same seal, and be passed along toward his destination with the greatest speed. But first he had encountered the company commander in the front line, who had regarded the whole mission with owlishly grave suspicion. He had followed this company commander to battalion headquarters, where the battalion commander, who had been a barber before the movement, was filled with enthusiasm on hearing the account of his mission. This commander, who was named Gomez, cursed the company commander for his stupidity, patted Andres on the back, gave him a drink of bad brandy, and told him that he himself, the ex-barber, had always wanted to be a guerrillero. He had then roused his adjutant, turned over the battalion to him, and sent his orderly to wake up and bring his motorcyclist. Instead of sending Andres back to brigade headquarters with the motorcyclist, Gomez had decided to take him there himself in order to expedite things, and with Andres holding tight onto the seat ahead of him, they roared, bumping down the shell-pocked mountain road between the double row of big trees, the headlight of the motorcycle showing their whitewashed bases and the places on the trunks where the whitewash and the bark had been chipped and torn by shell fragments and bullets during the fighting along this road in the first summer of the movement. They turned into the little smashed-roof mountain resort town where brigade headquarters was, and Gomez had braked the motorcycle like a dirt track racer and leaned it against the wall of the house where a sleepy sentry came to attention as Gomez pushed by him into the big room where the walls were covered with maps and a very sleepy officer with a green eyeshade sat at a desk with a reading lamp, two telephones, and a copy of Mundo Obrero. This officer looked up at Gomez and said,
"What doest thou here? Have you never heard of the telephone?"
"I must see the lieutenant colonel," Gomez said.
"He is asleep," the officer said. "I could see the lights of that bicycle of thine for a mile coming down the road. Dost wish to bring on a shelling?"
"Call the lieutenant colonel," Gomez said. "This is a matter of the utmost gravity."
"He is asleep, I tell thee," the officer said. "What sort of a bandit is that with thee?" He nodded toward Andres.
"He is a guerrillero from the other side of the lines with a dispatch of the utmost importance for the General Goltz, who commands the attack that is to be made at dawn beyond Navacerrada," Gomez said excitedly and earnestly. "Rouse the Teniente Coronel, for the love of God."
The officer looked at him with his droopy eyes shaded by the green celluloid.
"All of you are crazy," he said. "I know of no General Goltz, nor of no attack. Take this sportsman and get back to your battalion."
"Rouse the Teniente Coronel, I say," Gomez said, and Andres saw his mouth tightening.
"Go obscenity yourself," the officer said to him lazily, and turned away.
Gomez took his heavy 9mm star pistol out of its holster and shoved it against the officer's shoulder.
"Rouse him, you fascist bastard," he said. "Rouse him, or I'll kill you."
"Calm yourself," the officer said. "All you barbers are emotional."
Andres saw Gomez's face draw with hate in the light of the reading lamp, but all he said was,
"Rouse him."
"Orderly," the officer called in a contemptuous voice.
A soldier came to the door and saluted and went out.
"His fiancée is with him," the officer said, and went back to reading the paper. "It is certain he will be delighted to see you."
"It is those like thee who obstruct all effort to win this war," Gomez said to the staff officer.
The officer paid no attention to him. Then, as he read on, he remarked, as though to himself,
"What a curious periodical this is."
"Why don't you read El Debate, then? That is your paper," Gomez said to him, naming the leading Catholic conservative organ published in Madrid before the movement.
"Don't forget I am thy superior officer, and that a report by me on thee carries weight," the officer said without looking up. "I never read El Debate. Do not make false accusations."
"No, you read ABC," Gomez said. "The army is still rotten with such as thee, with professionals such as thee. But it will not always be. We are caught between the ignorant and the cynical, but we will educate the one and eliminate the other."
"Purge is the word you want," the officer said, still not looking up. "Here it reports the purging of more of thy famous Russians. They are purging more than the Epsom salts in this epoch."
"By any name," Gomez said passionately, "by any name, so that such as thee are liquidated."
"Liquidated," the officer said insolently, as though speaking to himself. "Another new word that has little of Castilian in it."
"Shot, then," Gomez said. "That is Castilian. Canst understand it?"
Yes, man, but do not talk so loudly. There are others beside the Teniente Coronel asleep in this brigade staff, and thy emotion bores me. It was for that reason that I always shaved myself. I never liked the conversation.
Gomez looked at Andres and shook his head. His eyes were shining with the moistness that rage and hatred can bring. But he shook his head and said nothing as he stored it all away for some time in the future. He had stored much in the year and a half in which he had risen to the command of a battalion in the Sierra, and now, as the lieutenant colonel came into the room in his pajamas, he drew himself stiff and saluted. The lieutenant colonel Miranda, who was a short, gray-faced man, who had been in the army all his life, who had lost the love of his wife in Madrid while he was losing his digestion in Morocco, and become a Republican when he found he could not divorce his wife, there was never any question of recovering his digestion, had entered the Civil War as a lieutenant colonel. He had only one ambition, to finish the war with the same rank. He had defended the Sierra well, and he wanted to be left alone there to defend it whenever it was attacked. He felt much healthier in the war, probably due to the forced curtailment of the number of meat courses. He had an enormous stock of sodium bicarbonate. He had his whiskey in the evening. His 23-year-old mistress was having a baby, as were nearly all the other girls who had started out as milicianas in the July of the year before. And now he came into the room, nodded in answer to Gomez's salute, and put out his hand.
"What brings thee, Gomez?" he asked, and then to the officer at the desk, who was his chief of operation. "Give me a cigarette, please, Pepe." Gomez showed him Andres's papers and the dispatch. The lieutenant colonel looked at the salvoconducto quickly, looked at Andres, nodded and smiled, and then looked at the dispatch hungrily. He felt of the seal, tested it with his forefinger, then handed both the safe conduct and dispatch back to Andres. "Is the life very hard there in the hills?" he asked.
"No, my lieutenant colonel," Andres said.
"Did they tell thee where would be the closest point to find General Goltz's headquarters?"
"Navacerrada, my lieutenant colonel," Andres said. "The Inglés said it would be somewhere close to Navacerrada, behind the lines to the right of there."
"What Inglés?" the lieutenant colonel asked quietly.
"The Inglés who is with us as a dynamiter."
The lieutenant colonel nodded. It was just another sudden, unexplained rarity of this war.
"The Inglés who is with us as a dynamiter.
You had better take him, Gomez, on the motor," the lieutenant colonel said. "Write them a very strong salvoconducto to the Estado Mayor of General Goltz for me to sign," he said to the officer in the green celluloid eyeshade. "Write it on the machine, Pepe. Here are the details." He motioned for Andres to hand over his safe conduct and put on two seals. He turned to Gomez.
"You will need something strong tonight."
"It is rightly so. People should be careful when an offensive is projected. I will give you something as strong as I can make it."
Then to Andres, very kindly, he said,
"Dost wish anything? To eat or to drink?"
"No, my lieutenant colonel," Andres said. "I am not hungry. They gave me cognac at the last place of command, and more would make me seasick."
"Did you see any movement or activity opposite my front as you came through?"
the lieutenant colonel asked Andres politely.
"It was as usual, my lieutenant colonel. Quiet. Quiet."
"Did I not meet thee in Cercedilla about 3 months back?"
the lieutenant colonel asked.
"Yes, my lieutenant colonel."
"I thought so." The lieutenant colonel patted him on the shoulder. "You were with the old man Anselmo. How is he?"
"He is well, my lieutenant colonel," Andres told him.
"Good. It makes me happy," the lieutenant colonel said.
The officer showed him what he had typed, and he read it over and signed it.
"You must go now quickly," he said to Gomez and Andres. "Be careful with the motor," he said to Gomez. "Use your lights. Nothing will happen from a single motor, and you must be careful. My compliments to Comrade General Goltz. We met after Peguerinos."
He shook hands with them both.
"Button the papers inside thy shirt," he said. "There is much wind on a motor."
After they went out, he went to a cabinet, took out a glass and a bottle, and poured himself some whiskey, and poured plain water into it from an earthenware crock that stood on the floor against the wall. Then, holding the glass and sipping the whiskey very slowly, he stood in front of the big map on the wall and studied the offensive possibilities in the country above Navacerrada.
"I am glad it is Goltz, and not me," he said finally to the officer who sat at the table.
The officer did not answer, and looking away from the map and at the officer, the lieutenant colonel saw he was asleep with his head on his arms. The lieutenant colonel went over to the desk and pushed the two phones close together so that one touched the officer's head on either side. Then he walked to the cupboard, poured himself another whiskey, put water in it, and went back to the map again. Andres, holding tight onto the seat where Gomez was forking the motor, bent his head against the wind as the motorcycle moved, noisily exploding, into the light-split darkness of the country road that opened ahead, sharp, with the high black of the poplars beside it, dimmed and yellow soft now as the road dipped into the fog along a steam bed, sharpening hard again as the road rose, and ahead of them at the crossroads the headlight showed the gray bulk of the empty trucks coming down from the mountains. Chapter 41. Pablo stopped and dismounted in the dark. Robert Jordan heard the creaking and the heavy breathing as they all dismounted and the clinking of a bridle as a horse tossed his head. He smelled the horses and the unwashed and sour, slept-in clothing smell of the new men and the wood-smoky, sleep-stale smell of the others who had been in the cave. Pablo was standing close to him, and he smelled the brassy, dead wine smell that came from him, like the taste of a copper coin in your mouth. He lit a cigarette, cupping his hand to hide the light, pulled deep on it, and heard Pablo say very softly, "Get the grenade sack, Pilar, while we hobble these." "Augustine," Robert Jordan said in a whisper, "you and Anselmo come now with me to the bridge. Have you the sack of pans for the máquina?"
"Yes," Augustine said. "Why not?"
Robert Jordan went over to where Pilar was unpacking one of the horses with the help of Primitivo.
"Listen, woman," he said softly.
"What now?" she whispered huskily, swinging a cinch hook clear from under the horse's belly. "Thou understandest that there is to be no attack on the post until thou hearest the falling of the bombs."
"How many times dost thou have to tell me?" Pilar said. "You are getting like an old woman, Inglés."
"Only to check," Robert Jordan said. "And after the destruction of the post, you fall back onto the bridge and cover the road from above and my left flank."
"The first time thou outlined it, I understood it as well as I will ever understand it," Pilar whispered to him. "Get thee about thy business."
"That no one should make a move, nor fire a shot, nor throw a bomb, until the noise of the bombardment comes," Robert Jordan said softly.
"Do not molest me more," Pilar whispered angrily. "I have understood this since we were at Sordos."
Robert Jordan went to where Pablo was tying the horses.
"I have only hobbled those which are liable to panic," Pablo said. "These are tied, so a pull of the rope will release them. See?"
"Good."
"I will tell the girl and the gypsy how to handle them," Pablo said.
His new men were standing in a group by themselves, leaning on their carbines.
"Dost understand all?" Robert Jordan asked.
"Why not?" Pablo said. "Destroy the post, cut the wire, fall back on the bridge. Cover the bridge until thou blowest.
And nothing to start until the commencement of the bombardment."
"Thus it is."
"Well then, much luck."
Pablo grunted. Then he said,
"Thou wilt cover us well with the máquina, and with thy small máquina when we come back, eh, Inglés?"
"De la primera," Robert Jordan said.
"Off the top of the basket."
"Then," Pablo said, "nothing more. But in that moment thou must be very careful, Inglés. It will not be simple to do that unless thou art very careful."
"I will handle the máquina myself," Robert Jordan said to him.
"Hast thou much experience? For I am of no mind to be shot by Augustine with his belly full of good intentions."
"I have much experience, truly. And if Augustine uses either máquina, I will see that he keeps it way above thee. Above, above and above."
"Then nothing more," Pablo said.
Then he said softly and confidentially,
"There is still a lack of horses."
"The son of a bitch," Robert Jordan thought.
"Or does he think I did not understand him the first time?"
"I go on foot," he said. "The horses are thy affair."
"Nay, there will be a horse for thee, Inglés," Pablo said softly. "There will be horses for all of us."
"That is thy problem," Robert Jordan said. "Thou dost not have to count me. Hast enough rounds for thy new máquina?"
"Yes," Pablo said. "All that the cavalryman carried. I have fired only 4 to try it. I tried it yesterday in the high hills."
"We go now," Robert Jordan said. "We must be there early and well hidden."
"We all go now," Pablo said. "Suerte, Inglés."
I wonder what the bastard is planning now, Robert Jordan said. But I am pretty sure I know. Well, that is his, not mine. Thank God I do not know these new men. He put his hand out and said, Suerte, Pablo. And their two hands gripped in the dark. Robert Jordan, when he put his hand out, expected that it would be like grasping something reptilian or touching a leper. He did not know what Pablo's hand would feel like, but in the dark, Pablo's hand gripped his hard and pressed it frankly, and he returned the grip. Pablo had a good hand in the dark, and feeling it gave Robert Jordan the strangest feeling he had felt that morning. We must be allies now, he thought. There was always much handshaking with allies, not to mention decorations and kissing on both cheeks, he thought. I'm glad we do not have to do that. I suppose all allies are like this. They always hate each other au fond. But this Pablo is a strange man. Suerte, Pablo, he said, and gripped the strange, firm, purposeful hand hard. I will cover thee well. Do not worry.
I am sorry for having taken thy material, Pablo said. It was an equivocation.
But thou hast brought what we needed.
I do not hold this of the bridge against the Inglés, Pablo said. I see a successful termination for it.
What are you two doing? Becoming maracones?
Pilar said suddenly beside them in the dark. That is all thou hast lacked, she said to Pablo.
Get along, Inglés, and cut thy goodbyes short before this one steals the rest of thy explosive.
Thou dost not understand me, woman, Pablo said. The Inglés and I understand one another.
Nobody understands thee, neither God nor thy mother, Pilar said, nor I either. Get along, Inglés. Make thy goodbyes with thy cropped head and go. Me cago en tu padre, but I begin to think thou art afraid to see the bull come out.
Thy mother, Robert Jordan said.
Thou never hadst one, Pilar whispered cheerfully. Now go, because I have a great desire to start this and get it over with.
Go with thy people, she said to Pablo. Who knows how long their stern resolution is good for? Thou hast a couple that I would not trade thee for. Take them and go. Robert Jordan slung his pack on his back and walked over to the horses to find Maria. Goodbye, guapa, he said. I will see thee soon. He had an unreal feeling about all of this now, as though he had said it all before, or as though it were a train that were going, especially as though it were a train, and he was standing on the platform of a railway station.
Goodbye, Roberto, she said. Take much care.
Of course, he said. He bent his head to kiss her, and his pack rolled forward against the back of his head so that his forehead bumped hers hard. As this happened, he knew this had happened before, too. Don't cry, he said, awkward not only from the load.
I do not, she said. But come back quickly.
Do not worry when you hear the firing. There is bound to be much firing.
Nay, only come back quickly.
Goodbye, guapa, he said awkwardly.
Salud, Roberto.
Robert Jordan had not felt this young since he had taken the train at Red Lodge to go down to Billings to get the train there to go away to school for the first time. He had been afraid to go, and he did not want anyone to know it, and at the station, just before the conductor picked up the box he would step up on to reach the steps of the day coach, his father had kissed him goodbye and said, May the Lord watch between thee and me, while we are absent the one from the other. His father had been a very religious man, and he had said it simply and sincerely. But his mustache had been moist, and his eyes were damp with emotion, and Robert Jordan had been so embarrassed by all of it, the damp religious sound of the prayer and by his father kissing him goodbye, that he had felt suddenly so much older than his father and sorry for him that he could hardly bear it. After the train started, he had stood on the rear platform and watched the station and the water tower grow smaller and smaller, and the rails crossed by the ties narrowed toward a point where the station and the water tower stood now, minute and tiny, in the steady clicking that was taking him away. The brakeman said, Dad seemed to take your going sort of hard, Bob. Yes, he had said, watching the sagebrush that ran from the edge of the roadbed between the passing telegraph poles across to the streaming by dusty stretching of the road. He was looking for sage hens.
You don't mind going away to school?
No, he had said, and it was true. It would not have been true before, but it was true that minute, and it was only now, at this parting, that he ever felt as young again as he had felt before that train left. He felt very young now, and very awkward, and he was saying goodbye as awkwardly as one can be when saying goodbye to a young girl when you are a boy in school, saying goodbye at the front porch, not knowing whether to kiss the girl or not. Then he knew it was not the goodbye he was being awkward about. It was the meeting he was going to. The goodbye was only a part of the awkwardness he felt about the meeting. "You're getting them again," he told himself. "But I suppose there is no one that does not feel that he is too young to do it. He would not put a name to it. Come on," he said to himself, "come on. It is too early for your second childhood." "Goodbye, Guapa," he said. "Goodbye, Rabbit." "Goodbye, my Roberto," she said. And he went over to where Anselmo and Augustine were standing and said, "Vámonos." Anselmo swung his heavy pack up. Augustine, fully loaded since the cave, was leaning against a tree, the automatic rifle jutting over the top of his load.
"Good," he said. "Vámonos."
The three of them started down the hill.
"Buena suerte, Don Roberto," Fernando said,
as the three of them passed him as they moved in single file between the trees. Fernando was crouched on his haunches a little way from where they passed, but he spoke with great dignity.
"Buena suerte thyself, Fernando," Robert Jordan said.
"In everything thou doest," Augustine said.
"Thank you, Don Roberto,"
Fernando said, undisturbed by Augustine.
"That one is a phenomenon, Inglés,"
Augustine whispered.
"I believe thee," Robert Jordan said.
"Can I help thee? Thou art loaded like a horse."
"I am all right," Augustine said. "Man, but I am content we are started."
"Speak softly," Anselmo said. "From now on, speak little. And softly."
Walking carefully downhill, Anselmo in the lead, Augustine next, Robert Jordan placing his feet carefully so that he would not slip, feeling the dead pine needles under his rope-soled shoes, bumping a tree root with one foot and putting a hand forward and feeling the cold metal jut of the automatic rifle barrel and the folded legs of the tripod, then working sideways down the hill, his shoes sliding and grooving the forest floor, putting his left hand out again and touching the rough bark of a tree trunk, then as he braced himself, his hand feeling a smooth place, the base of the palm of his hand coming away sticky with the resinous sap where a blaze had been cut. They dropped down the steep wooded hillside to the point above the bridge where Robert Jordan and Anselmo had watched the first day. Now Anselmo was halted by a pine tree in the dark, and he took Robert Jordan's wrist and whispered, so low Jordan could hardly hear him,
"Look, there is the fire in his brazier."
It was a point of light below where Robert Jordan knew the bridge joined the road.
"Here is where we watched," Anselmo said.
He took Robert Jordan's hand and bent it down to touch a small, fresh blaze low on a tree trunk.
"This I marked while thou watched. To the right is where thou wished to put the máquina.
We will place it there."
"Good."
They put the packs down behind the base of the pine trunks, and the two of them followed Anselmo over to the level place where there was a clump of seedling pines.
"It is here," Anselmo said. "Just here."
From here, with daylight, Robert Jordan crouched behind the small trees, whispered to Augustine,
"Thou wilt see a small stretch of road and the entrance to the bridge. Thou wilt see the length of the bridge and a small stretch of road at the other end, before it rounds the curve of the rocks."
Augustine said nothing.
"Here thou wilt lie while we prepare the exploding, and fire on anything that comes from above or below."
"Where is that light?"
Augustine asked.
"In the sentry box at this end," Robert Jordan whispered.
"Who deals with the sentries?"
"The old man and I, as I told thee. But if we do not deal with them, thou must fire into the sentry boxes, and at them if thou seest them."
"Yes, you told me that."
"After the explosion, when the people of Pablo come around that corner, thou must fire over their heads if others come after them. Thou must fire high above them when they appear in any event that others must not come. Understandest thou?"
"Why not? It is as thou saidst last night."
"Hast any questions?"
"Nay, I have two sacks. I can load them from above where it will not be seen, and bring them here."
"But do no digging here. Thou must be as well hid as we were at the top."
"Nay, I will bring the dirt in them in the dark. You will see.
They will not show as I will fix them.
Thou art very close, sabes? In the daylight, this clump shows clearly from below.
Do not worry, Inglés. Where goest thou?
I go close below with the small machina of mine. The old man will cross the gorge now to be ready for the box of the other end. It faces in that direction.
Then nothing more, said Augustine. Salud, Inglés. Hast thou tobacco?
Thou canst not smoke, it is too close.
Nay, just to hold in the mouth. To smoke later.
Robert Jordan gave him his cigarette case, and Augustine took 3 cigarettes and put them inside the front flap of his herdsman's flat cap. He spread the legs of his tripod with the gun muzzle in the low pines and commenced unpacking his load by touch and laying the things where he wanted them.
Not a mas, he said. Well, nothing more.
Anselmo and Robert Jordan left him there and went back to where the packs were.
Where had we best leave them? Robert Jordan whispered.
I think here. But canst thou be sure of the sentry with thy small machina from here?
Is this exactly where we were on that day?
The same tree,
Anselmo said, so low Jordan could barely hear him, and he knew he was speaking without moving his lips, as he had spoken that first day.
I marked it with my knife.
Robert Jordan had the feeling again of it all having happened before, but this time it came from his own repetition of a query and Anselmo's answer. It had been the same with Augustine, who had asked a question about the sentries, although he knew the answer.
It is close enough. Even too close, he whispered. But the light is behind us. We are all right here.
Then I will go now to cross the gorge and be in position at the other end, Anselmo said. Then he said, Pardon me, Inglés, so that there is no mistake, in case I am stupid.
What? Breathed very softly.
Only to repeat it, so that I will do it exactly.
When I fire, thou wilt fire. When thy man is eliminated, cross the bridge to me. I will have the packs down there, and thou wilt do as I tell thee in the placing of the charges, everything I will tell thee. If aught happens to me, do it thyself, as I showed thee. Take thy time, and do it well, wedging all securely with the wooden wedges and lashing the grenades firmly.
It is all clear to me, Anselmo said. I remember it all. Now I go. Keep thee well covered, Inglés, when daylight comes.
When thou firest, Robert Jordan said, take a rest, and make very sure. Do not think of it as a man, but as a target. De acuerdo? Do not shoot at the whole man, but at a point. Shoot for the exact center of the belly, if he faces thee, at the middle of the back if he is looking away. Listen, old one. When I fire, if the man is sitting down, he will stand up before he runs or crouches. Shoot then. If he is still sitting down, shoot. Do not wait, but make sure. Get to within 50 yards. Thou art a hunter. Thou hast no problem.
I will do as thou orderest, Anselmo said.
Yes, I order it thus, Robert Jordan said.
I'm glad I remembered to make it an order, he thought. That helps him out. That takes some of the curse off. I hope it does anyway, some of it. I had forgotten about what he told me that first day about the killing.
It is thus I have ordered, he said. Now go.
Me voy, said Anselmo.
Until soon, Inglés.
Until soon, old one, Robert Jordan said. He remembered his father in the railway station and the wetness of that farewell, and he did not say salud, nor goodbye, nor good luck, nor anything like that.
Hast wiped the oil from the bore of thy gun, old one, he whispered, so it will not throw wild?
In the cave, Anselmo said, I clean them all with the pull-through.
Then until soon, Robert Jordan said, and the old man went off, noiseless on his rope-soled shoes, swinging wide through the trees.
Robert Jordan lay on the pine-needle floor of the forest and listened to the first stirring in the branches of the pines of the wind that would come with daylight. He took the clip out of the submachine gun and worked the lock back and forth. Then he turned the gun, with the lock open, and in the dark he put the muzzle to his lips and blew through the barrel, the metal tasting greasy and oily as his tongue touched the edge of the bore. He laid the gun across his forearm, the action up so that no pine needles or rubbish could get in it, and shucked all the cartridges out of the clip with his thumb and onto the handkerchief he had spread in front of him. Then, feeling each cartridge in the dark and turning it in his fingers, he pressed and slid them one at a time back into the clip. Now the clip was heavy again in his hand, and he slid it back into the submachine gun and felt it click home. He lay on his belly behind the pine trunk,